Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Sit, boo, sit. Sure.
That's some bad hat,
Andrew.
It's a cool
thing.
Get any of that?
Not a doctor.
Bye, have a beautiful
from your life. Clarinet, non-revalve, clarinet, non-revalve.
Hello and welcome to Hunting Seasons, the podcast that dares to binge watch, deep dive and break down a season of television each and every episode. I'm Broderick Gordis.
I'm Damask Leary.
And today we'll be discussing Sex Education Season 2. Damask Leary, we're back to our normal format. It's just the two of us again. No. Paul Mitzi to muck things up anymore.
Finally alone. Oh, I've been waiting for this.
Let's say three's a crowd. Is that the...
Yep.
His company, three's crowd.
Particularly when it's Paul. It's fuck him.
He's worth four or five at least. Like, we're joking, Paul. Please come back one day. What have you been up to? What's exciting? What's happening?
Been teaching, just molding the minds of future generations, just classic stuff like that. But today, as I was telling you earlier, today is my dedicated Minecraft day because I've been working. I've been too busy to... spend my usual 18 hours a week on Minecraft. So today is that day. Obviously, I'm very kind and I've scheduled you in for a couple of hours. But then I'll be right back to it. Can I say my city really coming along?
You need to start that Twitch channel already. I want to be able to have you on the background while you're building.
Yeah,
just maybe, be in chat, send you questions, have you talk nonsense. It'd be great.
Maybe when I've got a bit more time on my hands. We'll see. I'm definitely interested in the idea. It's just, you got to do shit to do shit.
Sure.
I can't be bothered.
True.
How are you, Rod?
I'm good. I got to ask you, are you as excited as I am about The Matrix Resurrections?
I wasn't at all.
Yeah.
Like, I have no interest in The Matrix. Like, I really enjoyed the first one. And then I remember as a teenager watching the other ones in the movies being like, I don't understand what's happening, but I just assumed it was because I was stupid and not because the films were terrible. later, as an adult, I found out that they were genuinely terrible. The answer wasn't...
Debatable.
The answer... Okay, sure. but then I saw everyone was talking about the trailer. I was like, oh, I'll watch the trailer. I really liked the trailer.
Yeah, it's really good.
I finished watching it. I was like... That looks fucking sick. I was like, yeah, I'm into this. Okay.
There is just something about the potential for The Matrix to be great as a film series.
Yeah.
And while I know 2 and 3 will really disappoint for a lot of people, and to this day, my opinion on them is constantly changing. I think there are things that are really notable and admirable about them. I also think they fail on a bunch of different levels as well. But I love that first one so much. And this, I don't know, as soon as they announced it was actually happening, because there had been rumors forever there was going to be Matrix stuff, that Lana Wachowski was going to be writing and directing, then it actually happened, then we saw set photos, and then it was going to be coming out this December, we weren't getting trailers, I'm like, is it actually coming out this year? But now it is. I'm fucking pumped. Most anticipated film of the year by a mile. And why The Last Man starts next week? It's all coming up broad at the moment. Stuff is happening. Stuff I've wanted for a long time. So that's exciting.
Congratulations. That's what you need in, your lockdowns. This is what you deserve.
Last year, my football side was doing well. That's not happening this year. So at least I can rely on the movies to keep me going.
That's it. I also have to apologize to the listeners. If you hear grumbling in the background, my dog is in the room with me because Angela isn't here. So if you hear a little grumble, she's very upset that I'm ignoring her.
Speaking of guests, we were hoping to have Matt Palmer on this episode as well. He was keen to review season 2 with us after reviewing season 1. Fortunately, we couldn't make that work scheduling-wise. However, he's making every effort to get him on for season 3 review in a couple of weeks. So we'll see how that goes. In the meantime, though, let's get to our spoiler-free review of Sex Education season 2.
Let me clue you in.
Season in review.
It's a new term at Mordale High and new opportunities to make a buck giving sex advice to teenagers. But can Otis keep his clinic going with Maeve expelled and a new sex educator moving onto his turf? Season 2 of Sex Education introduces new faces, Sami Utalbali, Chinenye Ezwedu, and George Robinson, and consists of 8 episodes, each coming in at around 52 minutes and took us approximately 7 hours to watch. Season 3 is set to premiere on Netflix on September 17th, 2021, which is less than a week away at the time of recording this review. Apologies to there were terrible pronunciations of the actors' names I went through there. Before we give our thoughts on Season 2, though, Damask, can you please remind the audience what we thought or what you thought of Season 1 of Sex Education?
I really enjoyed it. I knew that I would, because I think everyone who had told me that they liked it generally have a similar taste in television. I enjoyed the frank discussion and honest discussions that were raised around sex and sexuality and all the parts of us that go into making us who we are as sexual beings. Yeah, I thought it was just like a really lovely addition to the teen sex romp genre that made a lot more sense for this time period and now what we know about, you know, all the implications of what a sexual relationship might have on someone. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it. And it also was like, for all of that, you know, really serious stuff, it was just a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah.
I loved all the characters. The performances were great. It looks beautiful. Like, you just want to buy a cottage in the country, in that town, and just live there. I really, really enjoyed it.
Me as well. I gave it a 4 out of 5, I believe, at the time, and had a great time with it. Really fun. Love the characters. I think the thing that most impresses me, I guess, and we all said this at the time, including Matt, that we sort of wish a show like this existed when we were younger, because it does feel very informative for teenagers, potentially, who are coming up in, some would argue, a more sexualized world than ever, thanks to access to this sort of stuff. Things that maybe were kept from us and kept us innocent once upon a time are not so much the case anymore, although that might have just been naivete as well. But it's almost like the anti, in a sense, like an anti-John Hughes film, in the sense that while those can be very informative in some ways and have a lot of energy to them, they have some really terrible sexual politics that I'm glad something like Sex Education is better at maybe dealing with in an adult and informative way. And at the same time, most importantly, being really, really entertaining. So I loved Season 1. With all that in mind, Damask, would you like to give us your spoiler-free review of Sex Education Season 2?
Sure. All right. So I don't think I have too much to add in terms of a spoiler-free review. I think I said a lot that is still applicable in my Season 1 review. So if you want, listen to that. If you want a long monologue about what I think about this show and what I like about this show. Though if you're listening to our review of Season 2, I'm assuming that you've listened to the Season 1. In Season 2, we often move away from the relationship of Maeve and Otis that was so much the focus of Season 1. And while I still love Maeve and Otis, both as individuals and as friends, I was happy to spend time with all the fascinating and endlessly entertaining folks of Mordale Secondary. This season, for all of its romantic love storylines, it really hooks me in with its platonic relationships. There is a lot of focus on the friends in our lives that push us to be better people and who hold us up when we're falling apart. You know, Otis and Eric are still very much a beautiful demonstration of this, but we also get to see Jean make a friend, and I loved every second of that. Ola makes connections that make her character so much more compelling than who she is with Otis, in my opinion. Maeve and her soulmate Amy continue to show what a perfect friendship looks like. Even Jackson makes a new friend, and while the story around that is a little cliche or a lot cliche, the two have such a lovely and heartwarming chemistry. I enjoy watching that friendship blossom.
Do you think they avoid making it feel too cliche just in the way that they do it? I think a lesser show or movie or story in general might ham-fist that a little bit more, whereas I thought it felt a little bit more natural.
Well, I think they do that in a lot of their storytelling. I think there's a lot of things that happen in this show that are, in writing, quite cliche, but then the way that they approach it makes it feel fresh. And like, even though you're like, I've seen this story before, I'm still having a really good time watching how they're approaching it.
100% agree.
But for all you folks out there that are worried that there won't be as much awkward sex stuff or lots of love declarations, don't worry. There's still plenty of that stuff in season two. But I just really want to reiterate what really moved me this time around was how much these people care about one another beyond the romantic or sexual. It was just really nice to see. And I think season two honors all the great work done in season one, and I enjoyed it just as much.
Very nice. I feel very similarly. I think a lot of what I said and we said in general during our season one review is very applicable. And in a sense, the easiest thing to say is that if you enjoyed season one, I recommend watching season two. There's no reason not to. Mm-hmm. This is probably a step up in some ways. I think what a good season two often does is moving to its second season with confidence. It's not trying to recreate the magic of the first season. It takes what was great about it and sort of springboards off that and just goes in. And like within the opening couple of minutes even of this season, I'm just sort of like, boy, this show has such a fun, confident energy to it. Mm. And it's infectious as soon as you start watching it. I agree with you that the expanding cast is great. There are episodes where Otis, in particular, was so much the focus of season one, and is still very much the central character of season two. Really, his story is the B or the C plot for an episode. He gets moved to the sidelines a little bit. Not that he's gone, but there is room made for other characters, new ideas, new relationships, new all sorts of different things in the show. And that's, I think, a really good sign as well of the strength of the ensemble cast and of the writing and just, they know how to use the material and the setup they have here really well. In an interesting way, actually, I don't think this is a spoiler to say that the first season is really set up around this premise of the sex clinic that Otis and Maeve are running. Mm. And while that's not entirely gone from this season, at one point I was just sort of like, oh boy, that's just really not that much of a thing in this show anymore. It's not really the focus anymore of this show, because the show found a way to still have its like stuff of the week, sex stuff of the week if you want, but not necessarily have to run it through the Otis clinic sort of formula anymore. And I think in a lot of ways the show is just good at, actually, one of the things I really enjoyed about this season was even examining the ethical implications of what they were doing in season one. And in some ways, looking back at things that happened in season one and going, okay, these need to be assessed with a little bit more scrutiny as to how healthy or normal is that? How much should we celebrate or want to invest in this person and what, based on what they've done in the past, for instance? Not trying to be as vague as to who that might involve. And I really appreciate the show. I think in general, I think the show is just, as these kids are maturing into adults, the show is maturing as well. And it is, I think, a testament to the show that as much as I'm invested in what the kids are doing, I am invested in what Jean's doing. I'm really invested in her relationships, both with Jakob, who we met last season, and other characters that she's starting to spend time with in this season. And I think that says a lot. And you were saying that this is going over cliches in storylines, particularly in like teen dramas and stuff like that. And I definitely agree with you on that. It's probably more on the relationships this season than it was last season in some degree. There was a bit more of like the leaning into the awkwardness of sex as a teenager. That's not gone, but it does start to feel like, oh, this could have been a storyline in Dawson's Creek or something like that. And yet you're 100% right. They're just really good at making it feel fresh and new and getting you invested. I think I said this a little bit last time. The only weakness I can find with the show, if there is anything, is that sometimes it might be just a little bit too polished. Like the way, because its cinematography is beautiful, but it's like it leans heavily into the needle drops to convey emotion or to give energy. Its shots are fantastic. Is beautiful to look at, to the point though sometimes where maybe it's missing a bit of texture or realness. Like everybody lives and like the school is beautiful and idyllic. The clothes these people wear are beautiful and idyllic. The place they live, their houses, the surrounding, everything is beautiful and idyllic. And it's like that can make it feel a bit more like a fantasy. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily a criticism, just it does put a bit of like a barrier between me and the show to some degree. Very, very, it's, I'm again nitpicking here.
I think like for me, just while you were saying that, I was thinking like, because when we were teens, you know, the big show was The OC, and that had such like an aspirational thing around like wealth and like possessions and all of that stuff. I guess maybe to make this show a little bit more palatable for teens, it's like they all look really good. Like the fashion is beautiful and it looks lovely and it looks aspirational in a way of like, that looks like a quite a nice life, perhaps. I don't know. But yeah. Yes, like you were saying, it's a very small critique that you're making.
For all these teenagers' angst and uncertainty, they are also extremely confident. Like, everybody is willing to speak their mind. Everybody is willing to express themselves constantly. And the last episode in particular, there are some very confident teenagers at this school based on how they perform their version of Romeo and Juliet. And all, you know, props to them. I'm just not sure how based in reality that is, but that's a different story. One of the things I have heard about this show at different times, though, people who maybe have bounced off it, is they found it a little bit basic. It's probably because the storylines can feel very familiar. You know, there's a lot of will they, won't they's, or it's a, I think there's like three love triangles I can think of in this season alone. And sure, that is trite or cliche, but what, because of the texture of the show around it, particularly the way it talks about sex, I also think if as much as it is, can be basic or familiar, it's kind of revolutionary and not in a, at least in terms of the sort of discussions that you might have around sex and sexual identity and gender identity and all sorts of things in this show. I really, really, really admire the show for it in a great way. It's so easy to recommend this to kids and adults alike.
We as adults in our 30s, yes, we've seen this many, many times before. And I'm sure even like teens in a lot of the media they're watching have watched it before, though probably less than we have. So I think there really are new aspects to this, these kind of like love triangles and stories like that, that has an emotional intelligence around it that I think is really valuable and makes it, something that is important. And I'm glad that it exists.
I think that might be it too. It's not always that, like, sometimes I feel like in teen dramas, the love triangle is like the world is ending, right? Joey chooses Pacey over Dawson, and we get that
good
amazing.
Good on you, Joey. Right decision.
Good choice.
Right decision.
Good choice. But we get that amazing image of Dawson crying. There's now become a joke because it's such a like over emotional moment, right?
When she leaves and travels around the world with Pacey in their boat. Oh, spoilers for Dawson's Creek, but you should watch it.
For what, a 20-year-old show? Yeah, spoilers for Dawson's Creek. But that is a meme, that image now of Dawson crying. And I think there's a reason for that, because there is something particularly like, it's almost cartoonish in how over the top it is. Even though that might be true to how you feel inside, I don't think it's so dramatized. And that's where this show, I think, can be a little bit smarter, is that it doesn't necessarily feel like it's the end of the world. It feels like a really important like friendship moment for these people, but it doesn't feel like, oh my God, their world is shattered at all times. Anyway.
Which I think is good, because I remember like, you know, we've been in our own love triangles, you and I, bud, with each other.
Now
back
that's
in
a
the
different
day.
Podcast,
in the teen days. And you do feel like the world is ending, but I also think that's perpetuated by like what I was watching, like what I was the messages I was absorbing.
Absolutely.
And obviously, if I'd sat down and spoken to my parents and they had said the same things that this show would have been telling me, I would have been like, you don't know what love is, Mum, even though you've been married for 30 years. But like watching it in a show, I maybe like might have had a bit more reasoning or more of a rational reaction to you rejecting me so many times. I wouldn't have been drunk crying in a park being like, why don't you love me?
Just having flashbacks here. We could write our own teen drama. We know this. How would you score this season out of 5 stars, Damask?
I think it's, I enjoyed it just as much as the first. I think Yeah, they go hand in hand. So I'm giving it a 4 as well.
I agree. I'm giving it 4 out of 5, which is the same score I gave season 1. I think I actually slightly prefer this season. It's probably just a confidence thing, as I said. I think the show knows what it is. It's full of confidence, and it's just really good at executing and what it's trying to do. Marginally better than season 1, but I really like them both.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stephens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
It's that time again where we beg and plead at your feet for you all to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. The show really does benefit when you leave 5 stars and a comment saying how much you enjoy what we do. It helps others find us, so share the love.
And to sweeten the deal, if we reach 25 written reviews on Apple Podcasts, we will finally review Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 1. That is a teen show full of love triangles and this sort of relationship stuff that I would love to re-examine, especially in a post-sex education world.
Yes, absolutely. All right, we would also appreciate it if you shared Hunting Seasons with everyone in your life that watches way too much TV, which is the entire population, let's be honest. So tell them to check us out.
Every client I talk to at work, I'm like, what have you been doing? I'm like, I've run out of things to watch on Netflix. Like, yeah, I know the feeling. Next week, we'll be back with our review of Kevin Can Fuck Himself Season 1. If you would like to contribute to our discussion of Kevin Can Fuck Himself, or if you have any thoughts on sex education, you can write to us or send us an audio recording that we may include on a future episode to contact@huntingseasonspodcast.com or find us on Twitter @huntingscast. But right now, let's talk spoilers for Sex Education Season 2.
You're now entering the spoiler zone.
Spoiler warning. From here on, we'll be discussing everything that happens in Season 1 and 2 of Sex Education. Before listening any further, we recommend watching all of Sex Education up to this point. If you've not yet done so, proceed with caution. There are spoilers ahead. You have been warned.
Deep dive.
It's cool to know other people think about this stuff too.
What do you want to talk about first, Mask?
Well, I want to talk about Jean. And just one thing, we can talk about all everything that happens with her, but just one thing in particular.
Sure.
So with Jean and Jakob, I really enjoyed what they're doing, or like I get what they were doing with that storyline. Mm-hmm. And I do like where it goes for Jean's character. However, the way they show that relationship and its breakdown didn't quite match up with what they were saying was happening for me, in terms of when they have that big fight about the pan cupboard.
Sure.
And earlier in the season, we see Jakob in Jean's house and how he is. I don't think Jean is wrong in that situation. Like, he does not listen to her or respect her boundaries. Like, I think she's allowed to have them. And I understand that she feels like put upon and he's always there, but it doesn't look irrational to me because he is taking over her house in a pretty new relationship. She tells him repeatedly that she has clients coming to her house and that he has to be quiet. It's like all these little things. I'm like, I think they're valid concerns.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you at all, actually. I think I can see the argument of like, you know, he is doing these things as a way of showing his affection. Mm. Like when he is trying to fix something, that's his way of like
yeah, totally.
Caring for her. That's his love language, is to like do those things, I guess, for her. Mm. But yeah, he is ostensibly moving into her house and, you know, I understand that she's going to have to make some concessions if she's going to have this guy around all the time, but I don't think it's that much to ask that he asks fucking permission or waits until she doesn't have clientele in the house to do something noisy.
Yeah. You know, this like is a workplace. Shit everywhere and not clean up after himself.
And that too. And again, I can get the idea that, like, he's comfortable or this is his, you know, but if she's like, I like things a certain way. Right now, this is still my house. We do not coexist. You do not pay rent. You do not, like, I live here with my son. You have your house with your daughter.
Yeah. You can't use all the hot water and then not apologize. I'm like, I'm so sorry I've used all the hot water. Totally I didn't agree. Realize. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with that. I think so too. And
because I do like the story of, like, Jean does have to make more room.
Yes.
For love in her life, because it is something that she's discovering that she does want now that there is a person that fits her needs and her wants. That I love that story. It was just how they got there. I was like,
yeah.
Oh, I think you're making him too annoying. I was like, and that was bothering me because I thought that's what the story was going to be, was that Jean figures out that he's not the right one. I was like, oh, but I really like them together, but they're making him so annoying that I'm like, kick him out. Like, he's terrible. Yeah.
I mean, they can both be flawed, and I suppose in some sense they both are, but it's hard to maybe the argument is more that Jean's reaction is an overreaction, at least in the way that we see it.
Mm. Yeah.
But on some level, like, if shut the fuck up, man, while I've got clients in the building, it is my workplace.
Yes.
You can't be too – it's hard to say that she's in the wrong in that scenario. Like, fair enough.
Yeah. See, I'd like it almost more if it was, you know, things seemed really great and perfect other than, like, the conflict with Otis. And then Remy comes in and, you know, she's still independent Jean, and, like, if she wants to kiss someone, she wants to kiss someone. And so she kisses Remy and that is the conflict. Like, oh, I had something really good, but I sabotaged it. And there are some sacrifices.
On some level, I think that is what the show is trying to do as well.
Yeah.
Is like, because that argument ultimately leads to her saying, I kissed Remy.
Yeah.
And the implication there is that part of that emotion that she has towards Jacob about the pan shelf or whatever is that she secretly is upset with herself because of what that happening. And that was like the conflict there. But
yeah. And it is her, like, kind of not being direct with Jacob and not like as me as a viewer, I'm seeing all these things and I'm being like, why isn't Jean saying something? Because this guy's clearly, like, irking her. And she doesn't do that and instead does something that she knows will sabotage the relationship.
The other thing you don't necessarily see, because I feel like does she – yeah, that, was there any implication or anything said to her earlier – to him earlier about that stuff? I think there was at least one conversation about
his
coins. Maybe. I can't remember. Because maybe that's what's missing, right, is her – I suppose if she hasn't communicated and then she blows up all of a sudden and he's unsure why, then I guess you can argue that he doesn't know better. Although she did say, please don't do this while I've got clients. But on another level, if she had said something to him earlier, it would have given him an opportunity to try and, you know, he's trying to change his habits too. He's used to living alone as well. And when he's alone, he does create a mess. And so if we get to see him making an effort, but he still stuffs up occasionally in little ways and she blows up about that and then that's unreasonable, then you understand where the self-sabotage is on Jean's part and you have a little bit more sympathy for Jacob in that situation, I guess. And that's kind of what was missing, I think. There was just maybe like a couple little steps that were missed. Mm. But overall, I agree. It's like, while that can be a little bit, wasn't executed the best, I felt it enough, I guess, between those two. Because I really like Jacob as well.
Yeah, I think he's great. And like, oh, that scene when Gillian Anderson, like, he finally says, he's like, I don't think you're ready, and definitely says, we're over, and she walks out and just, like, touches her heart, and, like, she's such a fucking amazing actress. Like, I just started crying immediately. I was like, oh, my God. Oh. Like, it really affected me. She's a gem. Like,
that exact shot, I just looked to Steph and went, She's good. Yeah. she's real good.
And I did the exact same thing. We both, like, with tears in our eyes, looked at each other and were like, oh, she's such a good actress.
That's exactly what the reaction was. Well, while we're talking about Jean then, was there anything else about her storylines this season? You said in particular you enjoyed her making friends. What's Ms. Groff's name?
I think it's Maureen. I believe it's Maureen.
Yeah.
Oh, and that actress who plays Maureen is fantastic as well. So, obviously, at the very beginning, we see Maureen coming in and very tentatively and nervously wanting advice about her relationship. This poor repressed woman who's, like, been forced to be repressed because her husband is. Yeah, and that scene about the lipstick was just, like, so heartbreaking. And seeing Jean's softer side was really lovely because, obviously, with the kids, the very beginning, she's not doing well at all. She's, you know, these are children who are very confused, and to speak aloud your theories to them about sexual dysfunction, probably not a great idea. But when Maureen comes in, she kind of recognizes this woman's vulnerability and is very kind to her and very soft with her and gently prodding to kind of get more information, which then leads us to one, Maureen telling the principal, Principal Groff, that she wants a divorce.
Amazing.
Got an applause out of me. I was like, fuck,
absolute
yeah.
Absolute fist pump over that one.
How dare he tell you that fruit's too expensive? What a cunt. I was like, good for you. That was great. And then one of my favorite parts of this season is when Jean and Maureen go out for some drinks and some dancing, and it's so much fun to watch. I loved it. Yeah.
No, me too. And, like, you know, Gillian Anderson's a snack, so it's always just nice to see her, you know, making some moves on the dance floor.
Yeah, I'm like, where's that club? How do I get there?
Exactly. Yeah, totally agree. It's wonderful. And it's, I suppose that's one of the things. It's like her relationship, Jean's relationship with Otis has always been one of, like, this super analytical, I guess, mum who doesn't know really how to have this conversation with her son, her best intentions being what they are. That transfers to how she works with kids a lot of the time. And then, but it's good to see that while that she does have skills in one area and talking to Maureen and then being able to have a friendship herself and sort of, yeah, find someone else to connect with was wonderful. I like that as well. Yeah.
It's always nice when, like, obviously we see softness with Jean through her relationship with Jakob, but I think it's really, I love when we can see softness with a character through friendship.
Yeah.
Like, it just feels so special to kind of see those moments. Yeah, I really appreciated it.
Well, that might be a good chance to talk about Jackson and Viv maybe in terms of platonic friendships. Jackson was sort of a surprise character for me last season in that so often, maybe in a John Hughes film or something like that, the jock, oh, actually, you know, I take that back. That's not true. Breakfast Club does a good job of, like, you know, everybody's got their own shit going on. So that's maybe a little reductive. But of making what could have easily been a cliche jock character and just making them the bad guy because they're the other guy in that love triangle and giving him his own story and giving him his own stuff. And then to expand that this season with the ongoing problem of him trying to communicate to his mothers that he is not interested in swimming. He does not like doing it, doesn't want to keep doing it. And then to form a friendship with Viv was wonderful, I thought. I can see you had a criticism of that a little bit in your review, I think.
I mean, not a criticism, because I said that the setup in writing is quite cliche, though I appreciate the execution. You know, it's just that whole thing of the jock being like, oh, I need to get better grades, and the nerdy girl being like, okay, but you need to teach me how to get a boyfriend type thing, which I've like we've seen before. But their friendship was so lovely.
Great.
And they have such great, like, chemistry together, those two actors. I was just like, yes, best friends. It was beautiful moment, obviously, when Jackson kind of reaches his limit with the expectations put on him, and, you know, after having such a nice reprieve with his broken hand, which is such a such a sad, sad moment when that happens. Really kind of horrifying that he's at that stage. But yeah, when they're at the party and he's having a panic attack. Because I actually forgot about the panic attacks. I was like, oh, that's right. Yeah, and she comes in and she just like holds him and lets him talk. And I love that she's such a good friend that she was willing to sacrifice the friendship to make sure that he was safe.
So really the first good. Thing I was going to say about the, what I like about the panic attack is that I think it's so well articulated what he's feeling. Mm. It's like all of a sudden I got that break and now my hand is healed and it's all coming back so quickly. And it's just like just all that pressure is back. Yeah. But yeah, the Viv telling Jackson's mums about what he's what's going on is a really big choice. Like, yeah. That is a huge, huge thing to do to expressly against their wishes,
mm-hmm.
Jackson's wishes, to go out and tell them. I can see the pros and cons of that situation. Should she have spent more time maybe trying to convince him this is a good idea than just going that night and going and telling them? I think there's a fair argument to be made that she could have gone a little bit further before she pulled the trigger on that, though he is obviously suffering in a big way.
Yeah.
But at the same point, it is the right thing to do ultimately, yeah. Though I'd argue maybe the way it was done wasn't the best.
Yeah, I think the only criticism of that choice for me would be, and I think this is more a time issue, is that because she hasn't spent a lot of time in that home, she probably does not understand the dynamics and whether or not that is actually a safe space.
Exactly.
Or whether they would be open to, you know, getting him the mental health stuff that he needs. She didn't know that they would be open to hearing that. But moving beyond that kind of plot hole, I think it was the right choice. I think she was scared for her friend who hurt himself quite badly.
That was the big thing that makes it easier to understand, is that when he is willing to hurt himself, and she does, I mean, she does it in that cold robotic statistical way, but like the idea that you're 9 times more likely to commit suicide if you're hurting yourself as well, or whatever the stat was. Yeah, hard not to be compelled by that sort of statistic, I guess.
Yeah, she's going by the facts, you know, and that's how she operates. And that's, you know, it's nice to kind of see that she has room to grow as well. Like, she acknowledges that that's not what she wants her whole life to be. She does want connections with others and not a boyfriend, but yeah, friends would be lovely. And she, through her friendship with Jackson, realizes the value in them. Yeah, it's nice.
Did you like the conversation between Jackson and his parents, particularly the bit where he says you guys just need a divorce already, when they're on the way to, I think they're on the way to the psychologist and the flat tire happens. Yeah. Because that was like another one of those situations where you're like, I don't think he's wrong.
He's not wrong. Like, no.
And that might be hard to hear, but you guys are really, really struggling and he knows it.
They needed to hear it. Like, it's such a toxic home environment. They don't speak to one another. They all we ever see them do is argue. Like, that's all it is. And it's always about the same fucking thing. It would drive you nuts to be in that environment. And I think it's valid that he snapped. Like, they're on the way to help their son who is really struggling and they're fighting about a fucking flat tire. Just their perspective is so far off that I think it'd be devastating if in your marriage your child said to you, you need to get a divorce. Because then you'd be like, oh, that is a devastating thing to hear, because how I feel inside, I'm not expressing it subtly. I'm actively like making my child's life worse. I think it needed to be done.
It's also interesting in like comparison to Remy and what happened with him and Otis and Jean, where there's a lot of bad things that were happening there, obviously, and it was definitely the right thing that Jean and Remy split up.
Mm-hmm.
But Otis asked the question of like, well, why the fuck did you leave me though? It's like, you didn't have to fly to America. You could have still lived in the vicinity and been my dad, but instead you went and made another family somewhere else and left me behind. And like, that's a difference too. for every argument that Jackson's parents shouldn't be together anymore, they can still be his parents. But that's not what it feels like when, like, they're in a big sense, they're trying to stay together for Jackson's sake. That has its toxic side. The other side of it is Remy leaves and abandoned his child without a father figure. Although you couldn't do much worse than Remy as a father figure anyways. He probably, in the long term, is going to be better off without Remy around, Otis. But anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. I also think it's probably really that conversation that Jackson has with the mum from Ted Lasso.
Hannah Waddington, Waddington's character? Yes. The shame nun.
Yeah, that way she can be in that relationship by choice and not because she feels like she has to in order to keep that connection with Jackson. So now if they do move forward, it's because she wants to be there and not kind of perhaps out of some kind of resentment that she isn't the bio mum or whatever.
Let's come back to Otis then. Since theoretically he's the main character, though not necessarily the most interesting storyline, depending on where your allegiances lie.
Yeah.
What did you make of Otis this season? There's a bit going on. We start off with him. I do love the complete overcompensation switcheroo from last season where he could barely touch himself to where he can't stop touching himself in season one. Like, that opening montage is very funny.
Yes. At first I was like, oh, no. And then it just got so absurd and just hilarious. I was like, this is great.
The only
this
thing
is
I can't
a great
figure out,
opener.
From a practical point of view, especially when he's having to go in the car, it's like, where the fuck were you planning to put that? Like, I just do not understand for a second what you were thinking was going to happen. Even if you got away with it, how are you going to hide the evidence?
It's true. I just loved, the Pomeranian in that scene. Like, the whole thing, which is, anything is setting him off. First it was, hard nipples, and then he's, making eye contact with the Pomeranian. It was very funny. And it gave me so much energy in those first moments.
Agreed.
Yay, this show is back. I'm watching it, and I'm loving it. Yep. I'm excited to see where everything goes, including apparently his jizz. So Otis this season, I really liked it because it wasn't the most fascinating part of this season for me, but I think, season one, Otis is this really nice, lovely guy. Mm. And it's one of those classic things of a nice, lovely guy with no experience suddenly is getting attention from people that he's attracted to. Oh, my goodness, that's really overwhelming. And he makes some really bad choices, though trying to do it from a good place, but making really bad choices, but refusing to switch his perspective from, I'm just a really good, nice guy to, oh, I have made mistakes. But he goes, it's not my fault. It's the girl's fault. It's both of you. You guys actually kind of suck. I'm the nice guy. Fuck you. And I was like, I've seen that before.
Yeah.
Both on TV and in my real life. I thought it was a progression that made a lot of sense. It was done really well. And, I thought it was a good step to take for Otis.
Particularly because they are directly addressing it. Because there are actually television shows where the main guy, the nice guy, let's call it Ted Mosby syndrome, ends up being a complete fucking twat, and they're such an asshole and have no perspective on their self that they don't know it. They just consistently think they're in the right and everybody else is shit.
Yeah. They feel bad, so therefore they are automatically the victim.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And those are times when shows' main characters, you either have to start ignoring them because they're the worst part of the show, or you just actively bounce off it, I think. And what this does, is, I think, as you said, the progression into this asshole version of Otis that we get, and he rightly gets called an asshole by both Maeve and Ola in the party episode, and he earns that status 100%. Suits, but it's instantly an examination of that, which is really good. And that's the entire storyline for Otis this season. And particularly, it's always sins of the father, but the reflection back on Remy. And what was Ola's explanation? You're such a nice guy that you try so hard to be nice that you'll end up being an asshole or something like that. Or you're so keen to not be your father that you end up sort of being becoming him.
Yeah.
I thought it was a really good observation, and I love how pathetic Remy is. It's a little bit cartoonish, and my least favorite episode of the season, to get ahead of me a little bit, might be the camping episode, because Remy is so obviously shit straight away. You cannot pretend for a second that he is not a complete fucking clown. But I do like that they made this misogynist, self-involved twat a clown as well. I'm glad he's the joke, because it should be. When he says, when the guy comes over to get a signature after he's told Otis never read this fucking book, and I think he says something like man up or something like that as his tagline, I'm like, fuck, I hate you, Remy, but I know the show wants me to, so that's good.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Remy is absolutely a dickhead. But that conversation between Otis and Remy is wonderful. It's just about being honest. Like, if you're being a nice guy to be a nice guy, but ultimately you're not being honest, people are going to get hurt and people will leave. And if those people are important to you, that is something that is devastating and not really something you can come back from in a lot of ways. So, yeah, I loved that conversation. I was like, it's also really helpful that this guy is a therapist, because he's clearly like a narcissist and all this other stuff, but there is an awareness in him. Like, he's done all the reading, so he's aware, but he is who he is. And while he's very disappointed in himself and who he is,
he
can articulate it. Yeah.
Yeah. It just occurred to me, I don't know why, that both Maeve and Otis have parents returned to their life this season that they have complicated histories with. I would like to come back to the Otis, the Maeve, and the Ola stuff in a second, but how did you find the Maeve storyline with her mum returning, the complicated history there where Maeve obviously has no trust in her mum, has felt abandoned by her, has made herself completely inaccessible because she can't be vulnerable, to let her back in and then to be let down again and to make a very hard choice, but ultimately, again, probably the right choice at the end of this season. How'd you feel?
Stressed out.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the mum comes back and Maeve is, not trusting in any way. I was like, yep, good choice. That makes a lot of sense. Though it's heartbreaking to see that she can't allow herself, for very good reasons, I think that's what makes it more tragic, is that she has valid reasons to be a very closed off person.
Yeah.
Particularly with her mum. But then the entire time I was so stressed. I'm like, I really hope she doesn't fall. Like, it'd be a really nice treat if she doesn't fall down again.
Yeah.
But of course it's not that easy. It's not that simple. And she does. And like you said, Maeve has to make a really hard choice. I would say absolutely the right one, which we see earlier in the episode when her little sister is not being watched by anyone, or Maeve's having to watch her and there's a knife and her mum's out having a cigarette, though probably out actually getting high. Oh, it was very sad. And I felt for Maeve, but I'm glad we got to spend so much time with her by herself, or in at least a different dynamic than just her and Otis.
Yes.
That was really good. I'd be interested to see, now that she's made this decision, how she feels about it moving forward. Because she obviously knows it's the right thing to do, but the emotional ramifications of that, I think, will be pretty intense.
Is it Isaac, the guy that moves in across the
way? I think so, yeah.
How did you feel about that introduction of that character, the inclusion of that character, and ultimately his role in Maeve's storyline this season?
Introduction, I hated him. I was like, what a dick. He's a fucking dick. And then when we get kind of around to the point where they go to the party together, I was like, oh, okay, this is actually quite a nice friendship. Obviously, there are romantic undertones. I was like, but I don't mind that. I think he's a really cute guy. I think they actually have great chemistry. And if he turns out to be, a good guy and I support for Maeve, I'm fully into that, actually. It's like he said, pretty much Otis, but with a history that really matches Maeve's.
Yeah.
Though when he says that Otis will never understand what it means to be abandoned, we know that isn't true. Otis mm-hmm. absolutely has experienced that, though in a different way. The way that they leave it, though, I was like, oh, does he have to be like a bad guy? Like, does he have to be that much of a fucking loser? That was really disappointing. I didn't want that. But
is there any argument that he – I think it's hard to argue this, but I'm being devil's advocate a little bit here. That choice, knowing Otis and knowing what – like the one time he spent time around this guy, the way he treated Maeve, yeah. that there is an element that maybe is protecting her?
Yeah, I think that is a good argument.
It's a hard argument still because I think it's very easy to argue he's just being selfish and like it's a toxic thing where her not ever receiving the message means she can't make any decisions for herself.
Yeah, he removes her agency.
Exactly.
And, you know, the giant red flag is if anyone ever goes through your phone.
Yes,
like that exactly. is such controlling behavior. That's a huge red flag.
100%.
If anyone out there is in a relationship with someone that does that, run. That's mm-hmm. a very bad sign. Mm-hmm. So I can understand how he could justify it to himself. But me as a viewer, I'm like, well, you've burned it for me. I'll never be on your side.
Yeah.
I don't think you'll ever be good enough for Maeve now. Like you've made your bed. Yeah.
Is it something you could see Otis of doing?
Yes. The Otis we've known this season, yes. Where he ends up, no.
So should we afford Isaac the opportunity to grow as well?
Yes. I will do that. If season three does something cool with him, which is very likely because this show does that, then sure, I'm happy to go on that journey. But right where I am now, at the end of season two, I'm like, fuck you, Isaac. I hate you.
I agree. Going back to Otis and Maeve a little bit then, I want to get to Ola as well.
Mm-hmm.
You were talking about like how she can't be vulnerable. One of the most heartbreaking moments for me in this entire season, and not everyone's super invested in Maeve and Otis, and I understand why, but when she has her birthday and he brings the gift of the diary... Oh, by the way, emotionally cheating on Ola at this stage, but we'll talk about that in a second. But brings the diary with all the 5-year diary with her birthdays ripped out. There is the performance from the actress plays Maeve, the genuine love and affection she has for Otis in that moment is palpable just in her eyes. And then when she goes to say something and can't because of that inability to be vulnerable is fucking heartbreaking. I felt that. I really did in that moment. I thought that was a great little moment.
I really like the character of Maeve.
I do too.
And I think like this is another example of like a cliche character, right? But the way it's written and performed it's heart-wrenching. Like I really just want to go to that town and be like, don't worry, you can like move in with me and I'll like I'll look after you while you finish high school. Like I just feel so much affection for her, and I just want her life to be a little easier, which is why I enjoy that her English teacher that helps
Miss Sand.
So yeah.
Miss Sand, who I do not get whatsoever. I don't get that. She should be surrounded by boyfriends or girlfriends or whatever she wants.
When we first see no her having sex with that guy, I turned to Angela. I was like, that is fucking bullshit. There is no fucking way this sexy, sexy English teacher who is, she's so fucking gorgeous and such a lovely person is wasting her time. She could just go down to the pub and there'd be 15 men who'd be like, oh my God, can I please buy you a drink? I'm in love with you. Yeah, 100%. Absolutely absurd.
Does not make any sense to me. This is a very small town that must be surrounded by an apocalyptic wasteland where other men cannot get to her. That the only explanation that she can end up in this situation with that fucking loser.
Yeah.
But, side note on that, I may have just remembered this wrong or misread at the time. I thought they sort of coded him as gay in the first season. And obviously, he doesn't have to be as simple as that. I had a memory of him saying something, or I don't know what it was, but I was surprised when he ended up with Miss Sand, and maybe it was just because it did not calculate at all in my head when I saw it. But anyway. I agree. The part where Maeve... Well, you know, actually, something I really liked about that first episode, how Maeve got herself back into the high school, which inevitably had to happen, was I think we said last time, you know, it would be great if Miss Sand was a part of that because you feel like she could be. But I also like they, it wasn't just Miss Sand rocked up and said, hey, guess what? I'm going to make sure you come back to school. Maeve had to force the situation as well. So it was very much her own agency as well. It's like, I'm going to make this happen.
Yeah, it was her plan. Yes. And she just had a bit of backup at the end there.
Which I thought was great for the character as well. Something that didn't do a lot for me, though, was the quiz heads parts. That is kind of a storyline that basically could have fallen out the back of the season. I wouldn't have missed it. It didn't add anything to me. The faux drama around winning each part by like a point, this idea of the teamwork thing, I don't think it ever really worked on any particular level.
No, I think it's just a nice like bit of connective tissue between Maeve and Viv. Which introduces Viv, and then we get like the Jackson stuff. And then in the Breakfast Club episode, it makes more sense that, Maeve and Viv have some history.
Absolutely. I think it is more just as like a way to have these people exist in the same universe and introduce some new characters.
Yeah.
How do you feel about Otis and Ola as a couple, how the relationship goes?
Well, I never thought they had any chemistry whatsoever.
Yeah.
At all. I was like, I just don't believe that this cool chick would be that enamored by Otis enough to like want to fuck him. I see like total friendship vibes. That makes sense to me.
Sure.
But in terms of like a sexual relationship, I was like, or even a romantic one, I was like, I don't think she'd be that compelled by Otis. But he's a nice guy, and she's in, you know, this new place. I guess that does make a little bit of sense in terms of teenagers, and that's kind of like, you know, you want a boyfriend, this guy's nice, and why not? I never had that much affection for Ola until Otis was such a piece of shit to her. He was so cruel to her. And also
at
in
the
relationship.
Party specifically? Or?
At the party, but also like that was the real cruelty. But I also hated how disrespectful he was towards her dad.
Yeah,
like,
I
get
agree.
That you have an issue with this guy dating your mum, but that's your girlfriend's dad and she's in the room when you are having this tantrum.
It was actually one of the only times I thought they sort of failed to dramatize her part in that part in that whole thing properly. She kind of just stands there in those scenes, and we never really even get like the camera focus on her to see what she feels about this, because she might be angry at both of them. She might understand both of them. She might be more angry at Jacob. She might be more angry at Otis. I have no idea. She didn't really seem to express much of an opinion about it or have anything.
It really
about,
was
which
like
got
she
weird.
Was a random bystander and not like a part of that family and that dynamic that was unfolding.
Absolutely, which is a little strange, I thought. Also, my estimations of Ola's intelligence went way down the moment that she suggested they play Monopoly to defuse the situation. What the fuck
were like,
you thinking?
No.
You idiot.
If there's tension in the family, still stay well away from board games,
particularly Monopoly. Please. Someone
that
hasn't watched The Sopranos.
Just destroying families across the world still to this day. I don't know why anyone buys it.
100% agree.
Yeah.
Best
it's
in Settlers
so
of Catan, everybody.
Boring. What a boring game to play.
It's terrible.
Another thing about Ola is I didn't like the competitiveness between her and Maeve. I found that really boring.
Yes. So that was something I agreed with. I saw that and they're doing the whole like, you know, the bitch that wants my boyfriend thing. The only thing that saved it at all, because as soon as they introduced it, I'm like, got to be careful with this sort of storyline because it's so cliche. It's been handled so poorly so many times. Was I think we did get a good sense of their insecurity that they both had. It was really about their own insecurities more than it was about the other person.
Yes.
And so because we got to see that, I got to understand a little bit more, but it's a storyline that's been perpetuated and a angle of like girls being competitive over boys so often that I was like, the mere presence of it made me like get my hands up a little bit. Just like, why are we doing this? But it wasn't such a focus that it was a problem.
I just wish it like they could have come together much sooner, because whenever it was a thing, I was like, no, I don't care about that. Stop it. But I mean, it meant that we saw Ola develop a friendship with Lily.
Brilliant, by the way.
Really enjoyed. I loved that.
They recognized that Lily was a highlight last season. They said, let's make her a core cast member. More Lily. Very smart.
Yeah. They heard the people's cries.
They did.
And they answered, which was great. I really enjoyed that friendship. And, like, I was just having fun watching them as friends.
Mm-hmm.
And then when, obviously, Lily gives her the photo of her, like, slaughtering Maeve. And then there was that hug. And I was like, whoa, what the fuck are you guys doing? What? I was like, oh, they're okay. That's something that's happening. And then Ola's very quick realization that she was pansexual.
Yeah.
That she did indeed like Lily, and that she was so confident in that she would go over and give her a kiss. Which at first I was like, this is happening really fast. But then I was like, well, why not? Like, why can't it just be that easy?
If we're especially living as in teenagers.
This, yeah, if we're living in this world where so much is happening and they're all like having sex. Everyone is having sex and everyone is doing all this stuff.
All the time, everywhere, yes.
Then why couldn't it be easy for Ola, someone who is very confident? Clearly, she wouldn't be worried about her dad's reaction to, her sexuality. She doesn't have these societal pressures for whatever reason. She doesn't feel them. Cool. All right. Let's do this. And then obviously it was devastating when Lily practically pushes her out the door and then shuts it. I was like, because at first I was like, oh, that was easy. And then bam, I was like, oh no. that was very sad.
So it sounds like your affections for Ola changed pretty quickly once she was able to sort of move away from Otis, which, as you said, they never really had any chemistry. It never really felt right anyway.
Yeah. And because the thing with Otis was so focused around like his friendship with Maeve and that competitiveness, and I was like, yeah, I don't want Ola to be the girlfriend who is clearly not the one for him.
Yeah.
So she's going to be the other. Reminds me of on The OC. I can't remember. I think her character's name was Anna. And it was like the character of Seth, always in love with Summer, but then they introduce this nerdy girl that's like more in line with what his Seth's interests. Like,
sure.
But you know that like she's going to be around for like one season and they're going to be like, all right, you've served your purpose, fuck off. Like, I just really didn't want that to happen. Like, I've seen that so many times before. So I was worried about that. But I'm glad it quickly shifted when she realized that he was being a dick. And then she reflected and was like, when he says, I love you, she laughs, which is not great. And it's like, no, I don't think we are that kind of, that kind of couple. I think this is probably the end of the road for us. And she just runs over to Lily. I was like, oh, good. Okay. So she's going to have her own stuff to do for the rest of the season. I really appreciate that.
And it was great that we could find, that's why it impressed me this season, is they just found so much room for new characters to just naturally make their way into the story, and it never felt forced. No one ever felt like they were the one exception, the one storyline I think that did feel a little bit crowbarred in. And I'm glad it exists in there, and I know there are listeners of this show who'd be very happy this existed. But Florence's character, who had her like one thing about being, she found out she was asexual, I thought great perspective to have on the show.
Yeah.
Felt a little bit crowbarred in because they couldn't find a natural way to include her in the rest of the show, which almost every other character seems better.
Like, but Florence, I do just barely wonder, like, what happened with, and I agree with that criticism, absolutely. I do wonder that, we had characters in season one that had, like, an issue that perhaps next season then we'll see a bit more of Florence and explore that a little bit more. I would hope so. We don't know, but that's certainly a possibility. But I agree. I would have liked, if we're going to, because she is like, she pops up, but then we don't actually know anything about Florence.
That's
beyond
what I mean.
She
sort of pops up to have that moment with Jean. And again, I'm like, I think it needs to be that asexuality should be included in this as much as bisexuality, pansexuality, homosexuality, you know, cis, whatever. All of it should be in there.
Mm.
It's funny that that one doesn't quite feel as well implemented or integrated into the story as the others. The only other time we really see Florence is in the last episode. And even then it's just because she has to be, because she's Juliet.
She's Juliet. Yeah.
But... going back to Ola, the other side of the Ola stuff. Before I say that, the opposite of that again was you were saying about characters who came back from last season. They're in the episode where Otis is terrible at fingering, and
that was hilarious. He
reaches out to the I don't remember the character's name. She's the redhead,
the lesbian,
one of the lesbian couple that Otis did stuff with last season. She's literally there for that scene.
Yeah.
I was like, they don't reintroduce her. They don't remind you who she is.
She's
never in the season again. She's just here to give Otis a fingering tutorial and then leave.
Yeah. Which I love. Like, the way this kind of show dots characters like that throughout, it's kind of got like a porny vibe to me. Like, I love a world where people can just exist. And we don't need to see them all the time, but they're there.
Mm-hmm.
That scene was disturbing though. When I was watching Otis violate that orange, you know, I've seen like, you know, guys watch, you know, a video on like, or like a film or something where someone gets like kicked in the nuts and they go, oh, like that was my visceral reaction to it. I was like, oh, he was like giving her a pap smear. Like it was like that faucet that goes in and then separates it. Oh. It was horrifying to see. It was very funny though. Yes. I love Lily just coming up and being like, sort it out, mate. You're bad at fingering.
That was fantastic, yeah.
Yeah.
So the friend is you. Don't
Yeah.
Go back to Ola for a second. The other minor storyline she has, she is working at the same place as Adam. Which that storyline just ends with a lovely scene of her saying that she loves him and that he's her friend. Which I love, at least on a surface level.
Yeah.
The big question I have for you is, this season is very much a redemption of the character of Adam for us. It's trying to take the guy who was an awful bully and treated Eric like shit.
Yeah.
Absolutely abused him for years. As Otis rightly pointed out, this guy has been fucking with you forever. Why would you let yourself, you know, spend time with him, let alone form a relationship with him? And the whole season is trying to redeem him enough that we can allow that to occur and to be okay with that as an audience. How did you feel the show went with the redemption of Adam and his storyline with himself and also with Eric?
Yeah, well, I think Adam, I think we've just started to redeem Adam. I think this season was just kind of being like, this is who Adam is. These are the reasons why he is this way, and this is the ways in which that affects him. The same kind of repression that he has learned from his dad.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very sad. He doesn't have a whole lot to do this season other than obviously visit Eric in the middle of the night and they spend some time together. What is hard for me, and I think it's similar, you know, the first thing we spoke about today, you know, the execution of the relationship between Jean and Jacob. I think... So the execution of apparently Eric doesn't sparkle when he is with Raheem.
Yeah.
And he should find someone that makes him sparkle.
Yes.
I wholeheartedly disagree with that.
I think
we see them have so much fun together and they are different, but Raheem is so respectful and loving of Eric's differences and encouraging of anything that he might be interested in, even if he doesn't get it. Eric seems to be having a lot of fun with Raheem. I think he does sparkle and he's always smiling, looking at Raheem and laughing. And then, you know, the final episode, I think it is, you know, Adam acknowledges that the forest looks like penises and Eric starts laughing. That is the only time I'm pretty sure that we've seen Eric laugh with Adam. Like Adam is not a funny guy.
Yeah, 100%
Adam is
agree.
The least funny person in the world. He's, from what I can tell, incredibly boring.
Well, it's like the criticisms you might lay at Raheem's feet are that are things like he is going to have maybe a slightly strained relationship at most, based on what we saw, with Eric because of his religion. Mm. Or like things like that. They have different perspectives on life, which yeah. let's like they're going to be challenges. If you're going to form yeah. a long-term relationship and get to know, you know, have each other's families in their life and stuff like that.
But let's remember, these guys are in high school.
Exactly.
They're not going to be getting married and having babies. You know, statistically speaking, that's probably not what's going to be happening.
Totally.
Yeah.
And I just don't think for a second that Adam saying he likes Frozen is really a big enough statement compared to him, Raheem saying, I didn't like musicals.
Yeah.
Like, Adam liked the most commercial musical, children's Disney musical of yeah. all time.
Yeah.
is not really an endorsement of Adam, I don't think. No, I think he's going to be better at fucking going to church with Eric than Raheem is. No fucking way.
And I think, like, the fact that Raheem doesn't like musicals, but he
is willing to
enthusiastically wants to see Eric perform
yeah.
is so much more an act of love mm-hmm. than simply being like, oh, you like this stuff, these references that I don't understand. But I like Frozen. I was like, you guys have nothing in you have less in common with Adam than you do Raheem.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the I see what they're doing, but the execution of it is just like, no, I don't think that makes sense. But who knows where season three will take us.
I agree fundamentally. It's like, I can see why on some level Eric might find the stuff with Adam exciting.
Mm.
Especially, and unfortunately, I do think it is a toxic excitement, though,
yes.
that comes from the way that their relationship, sexual relationship, started,
mm-hmm.
which went from being one of Adam being the aggressor and being a bully to all of a sudden it being sexual and then disappearing right at the time where you were suddenly starting to feel yourself and have some confidence in who you are.
Mm.
That's going to be confusing. There's going to be a lot of emotions tied up in that. So I can see why Eric has there's something going on there that is enticing yeah. There's a mysteriousness and a naughtiness to it, I guess, of the going yeah. and out in the night and smashing stuff with Adam. But I don't really think the show makes compelling argument that can in any way be a better choice than Raheem.
I also think, like, there's so much tied in, I think, not necessarily in the show, but just generally, like, you know, as a gay teen, the validity you feel when someone who either is or represents the people who tell you that you are worthless. And so if you get them to love you, therefore you are lovable. And that is so unhealthy to want to pursue those types of people. Mm-hmm. I've been there. I know a lot of people who have been there. You see it a lot in gay culture, this kind of fetishizing and putting on a pedestal of usually like gender norms and that kind of presentation, because those people who usually like are the stereotypically beautiful girl or beautiful man, they represent all those people in high school who thought you were weird or gross or whatever. And if you can get them as a sexual partner and love interest, therefore you fit and you are wonderful. And I just like wholeheartedly want people to move away from that. It takes a lot of time to like heal those wounds, and to see Eric fall into a relationship like that, particularly with someone who is violent, is really concerning to me, and I don't really love watching it.
Do I believe that Eric can be a good influence or a good for Adam? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Do I think that Adam is good for Eric? I think he's exactly the opposite direction that Eric should be heading right now. And Raheem was definitely the right one. And that's the problem there. I feel like that's really only Eric's storyline this season, really, though. Apart from the first episode where he's sort of the Maeve in the clinic situation, that doesn't last.
Mm.
It boils down to that. It's very much about him choosing between Raheem and Adam.
Mm-hmm.
And I do kind of wish there was some other element to talk about there, but there really wasn't with Eric this season, I don't think.
I mean, I certainly want to acknowledge that the way things are left with Eric Raheem tells me there's probably going to be a lot in season three regarding that, because what happened with what Eric did in front of everyone with Adam at the play, at the musical, to do that to Raheem is fucking a terrible thing to do.
Agreed.
So, and the way that Raheem is obviously very affected by it and is very hurt and he walks off, I think we will kind of see, hopefully, I'm assuming, more of an exploration of the implications of that and all of that stuff, and perhaps there is hope for Eric to kind of, yeah, choose who he wants to choose and perhaps make healthier choices, whether that be Raheem or not. Yeah, so I'm hoping that, yeah, we'll get some healing there in the future.
Just before we move on to Amy, which will probably be our last topic before we get to final thoughts, we didn't mention that Otis loses his virginity to Ruby.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that development? I thought that was a great little, not twist is maybe not the right word, but wrinkle, because you don't see it coming, and it really, Otis has put so much, he has so much pressure on himself when it comes to sexuality, like his sex life and exploring sexuality, and just sort of have it happen with this girl who he has no connection with. If anything, there's an antagonistic connection there. I thought it was a really interesting choice and to connect those two characters in a way that you wouldn't have naturally occurred any other way.
I think it's a really accurate depiction of your first time having sex as a teen. Like, so often we put so much pressure on ourselves. It has to be really important. It has to be this huge thing that, you know, it's your first love, and that's the person you share that experience with, which is great. And, you know, a lot of people do get that. But I would say, you know, the majority of us, the first time that you have sex with someone is at that situation, and quite often is drunk at a party, maybe not at a party, but after a party, that type of thing. And you wake up and you're like, oh, I did the thing that had so much stuff attached to it. It's done now. And I like that he wasn't devastated by it.
No.
It just happened, and then you move on, and then we get this lovely sequence of events with Ruby, who I really enjoy. I think she's very funny. She's a terrible person, but that's part of why I love her. But while she is never not terrible, there are layers there. And I enjoyed their time together, and I enjoyed her reasoning of why she has sex with nerdy guys when she's feeling bad about herself. I know a couple of my friends out there, you know, used to have the same reasoning. They're like, well, this person's going to be in love with me and I'm never going to get attached, and this is the perfect situation. It made a lot of sense for them to connect, and it wasn't overly sappy. It was just kind of matter of fact. And that scene where they're sitting on the log was beautiful. It looked so good.
Would you be interested in seeing more of Otis and Ruby in season three?
I never thought I'd say this, but after watching them ride on his bike together, I was like, yeah, I think this is nice. This is quite nice, yeah.
There's a couple of shots in the trailer that suggest there's at least going to be it's not just going to be a one and done dropped thing. Can't say it's going to be the whole thing, but I was happy to see a screenshot of like, oh, okay, There's going to be a little bit more there.
That's cool. I'm glad, because I think, there seems to be
this isn't a spoiler, because it's all speculation.
Yeah. A level of mutual respect after the conversations they've had. So either if they become friends or, you know, have a sexual relationship. I really doubt that they would be boyfriend-girlfriend, but if they have a sexual relationship.
Sure.
That's based on mutual respect. I'm like, yeah, sure, I'm into that.
I think that can happen, though. I think there are examples in shows, and I'm struggling to think of them off the top of my head, where characters you don't necessarily naturally expect to get together do, and then it kind of strangely works in a way you don't expect. You go, oh, this is kind of crazy how naturally this happened or works, and I like this.
Yeah.
Be nice to see more of that. Finally, I want to talk about Amy in this season as well. She has a devastating storyline. The happiest, most carefree.
Oh, she's so beautiful.
You know, she's a little bit of a bimbo
person
who has this horrible straight up sexual assault. There's no fucking around it, what it was, on this bus.
Yeah.
And then the episode of Maeve for Maeve's birthday, convincing Amy to report it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the ongoing consequences throughout the rest of the season of Amy trying to deal with that trauma.
Yeah.
Resulting in her not just be able to get on buses anymore, but not wanting to be touched by her also beautiful boyfriend, Steve.
Yeah, Steve.
He's wonderful as well. Mm. How'd you find that storyline? How'd you find the way it was handled? The particularly, I would like to start with the Maeve getting her to report it to the police, which is an interesting turn of events after last season when there was the whole, what do you call that? Revenge porn thing happening with involving, which was Ruby doing that from memory, actually, wasn't it?
No.
Other way around, Ruby was the victim and
what's the other girl's
her
name?
Her friend, yeah.
I feel like it's Layla or something like that.
Was the one doing it. And then in that situation, Maeve was very much no point telling the police. Mm. In this one, she's like, let's tell the police.
Yeah.
I thought it was an interesting turn, and I kind of appreciate that both those perspectives can exist in this storyline.
I will say, for any teens listening, never force anyone to report a sexual assault to the police. While the police in this show are lovely and wonderful, it's a really hard process. I think, you know, it does have value, and I think, you know, if you want to, absolutely. But that is a very personal thing for someone to do, and you should never force anyone to report anything to the police that they are uncomfortable with. You can support them. You obviously encourage them to see, like, mental health practitioners and all of that stuff. But going through the legal system is really hard, and it's something that really has to be thought through. And, yes, that's what I have to say about that, Maeve doing that.
Did you have any cynicism about how they showed the police? Because you said they were particularly lovely. It was almost like the show was trying to say, almost like quell fears that it would be a difficult situation, that you are going to be supported, that those systems are in place now to handle this better. Which might be true and probably isn't in all situations, though.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think it's good to show that, like, you can have a positive experience, even if, like, because nothing did happen with it, right? So they, like, never found the guy, but she felt good about reporting it. And that's great because she felt like she really did, she did something. Mm. And that's awesome. And I think that's great to show. Seeing such, like, cheery, you know, somewhat competent police officers in terms of, like, giving her support, something that encourages people to report, I guess, is good, if not somewhat misleading, perhaps, to the realities of it. I guess it's good, but also it's maybe not good. Yeah, I think it's a complicated thing. But I like that the power that she's able to regain isn't through the legal system. It's through community and being honest about how she feels about it, and having support of those that have experienced similar things around her. Like, that's where the real story is, and I think that was a good one.
Very quickly, just because you're talking about the way they sort of talked about the police in that situation, there reminded me a little bit of how they treated Adam when he was at military school, which I did appreciate. It was more complicated than maybe it would have been. It could have easily been a net negative or a complete negative.
Yeah, I thought everyone was going to be a dick. Yeah. Like, I thought everyone was going to be so cruel, as we've often seen. Yeah.
Right. And the nature of that and the connection Adam does have with those two other guys and then the way that sort of implodes, even though Adam didn't do anything wrong in that situation, he was thrown under the bus, but then the conversation he has with whoever that guy was, that other soldier that had been there, you know, a general, whatever, you know, a lot of, you know, men here are gay. I thought it was really
to speak to it. Yeah.
Was a really interesting point that was being made without having to go too deep on. I think it left it in a in a position that it's and the fact that the military school, in some ways, like Adam said, he was better off there than he was living with his dad. Which might not be true for everybody, but maybe in Adam it was in this case. I like that it wasn't a black and white situation. It was complicated and there were positives and negatives about it. Yes. It wasn't just this is bad or this is good. It's like this is different. It's complicated in its own way, but it's not what we want Adam to be in this storyline. So we're going to take him out of it now, but know that, you know, it's a complicated situation of itself. I quite appreciate that, actually.
Yeah, me too.
But you were talking about the community around Amy. So
yes.
What I wanted to ask you was episode, I think it's episode 7, is the Breakfast Club episode.
Mm.
Was it the best or the worst episode of the season? Because sometimes I'm not sure.
It's neither.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's
maybe neither. That's the right place.
Yeah. It was extremely contrived, which is not a great place to start. I also struggle with conversations that feel like the writers are, it's just very obvious that this is the lesson episode and they're going to educate us about.
You're waiting for the role play to end and then go, so what did we learn from this exercise, yeah. Everybody? You know what I mean? That's the sort of conversation that's happening here. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I don't think is great. Agreed. Think it's probably great for, you know, teenagers to watch that. But I, as an adult, and maybe teens feel the same way, but I, as an adult, was cringing a little bit.
Yeah.
In that episode, I was like, I know what you're doing and I love the idea of it.
You see the value in it.
Yeah, I really do, but I didn't like the way they did it.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm at with it as well. And I didn't, that's what I was comparing. It's like, this is either the best or it's the worst episode of the season. In my mind, in some ways. It's like, I think on an execution level, it is fumbling a little bit because it's not as well written and not as well executed, not as natural or as believable as other sequences or other episodes might be. Mm. But I don't want to devalue it for saying what it's saying. And I endorse its message of righteous female anger and community of women supporting each other. Mm. And of feminism, essentially. I really, really endorse it.
Mm.
It was extremely contrived.
Yes. Oh, I have one last thing I want to discuss before we go.
Please.
Into the next section. I wish that for all of the complexity we get around so many of our characters, that same complexity was afforded to the principal. He's such a villain this season.
Sure.
And does such a terrible thing. Like a truly terrible, unforgivable thing to, in a moment of anger, to photocopy the private notes of a therapist regarding sexual activity involving his students, kids, children that he is meant to be caring for, they are under his care. To do that is monstrous. And even at the end when he's like standing up on stage, like, a you know, twirling his mustache, like he's lost it. I was just like, oh, I wish he wasn't so black and white bad.
Yes, I agree to some extent. I would give the show an opportunity to maybe have a better conversation about that later.
Yeah.
But I don't...
Now that he's like, he's hit rock bottom.
Yeah.
We'll probably get that season 3. I'm just saying at that point, the end of season 2, I was like, damn.
Lacks sophistication in some of what the show is best at doing at, which is presenting these characters who are both... Most characters are understandable, if not flawed, most of the time. I also don't mind there being a bit of a villain sometimes. And he's as good a filter as you can get. This, like, repressed, toxic masculinity, whatever you want it to be. Does it make him a character caricature rather than a character? Sure.
I think you can do both. You can have him be the villain, but you can have
A
little bit more sympathy for that character in a way.
You've got to afford time for it though to do it properly. Mm. And I don't know where I'd like. I don't know if I want the show to be longer to incorporate that, or I don't know. And again, I'm just trying to sort of like, I'm sort of justifying that, like, well, it's a shortcut and it might be a little bit lazy. If it meant that we got to spend a little bit more time on Amy's storyline or a little bit more time on, like, Oliver and Lily, I'm not that critical of it, but I 100% see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It certainly isn't a huge detriment to the show. Like, yeah. I'd much rather spend time with other characters. Absolutely. It's just like a small criticism I had. I was like, but you're probably absolutely right. In future seasons, we will get that kind of nuance that I'm after.
Any last words?
Final thoughts.
That's why you always leave a note.
Do you have any side notes, Damask?
Yeah, I've just got a couple. Mm-hmm. So the first one is when Jean says to Otis, "You look just like your father when you lie."
Mm.
I withered into nothing. I was like, that is a gut punch. Because you would know all the hurt your mum has experienced when your dad lied to her. And then to make her see that face again, would that far out, that would really cut you pretty deeply.
I loved how angry Jean was with him in those last bits. What's the line she says to him? "I always get the worst of you."
Yeah. Oh,
I was like, that hurts. And I remember being a teenager at that age. And and I think it's a natural thing that teenagers tend to do. It's part of being rebellion at that age, is that you can treat your parents like shit sometimes. And the biggest problem that that Gene has is that she's his only parent. And so, you know, Remy shows up and he's all excited about it. Gene's there all the time and she cops his bullshit, which Oz has lots of. Heart breaks for her.
Yeah. But yeah, that amount of sadness and disappointment from Gene was like, oh, yep, I feel that. The next side note is with, and this will most likely, queer women will get this. I'm not sure if anyone else will. But when Raheem and Eric go on their date and they are on the dance revolution thing.
Yes.
So there is pretty much that exact scene in a lesbian film called Imagine Me and You.
Which okay.
It's not a good film. It's really not. But as it was happening, I was like, oh, there's a gay theme of like you take someone that you're interested in to dance revolution and have a cute dance together. I thought that was quite nice.
That's a trope now.
It is, yeah. It's got to be in everything. That's how you know they like each other. But yeah, that's it for side notes for me.
As my pet peeve often is, I hate watching people play video games wrong, and fucking they were not following along to the directions on the screen whatsoever. Fucking shits me. Do it properly or don't do it at all. some of my favorite lines: "Is the bike in question your vagina?" was a great one. And as much as I don't love this character, when the show was on and he was like, I think it's Quentin, was like, "I know all the lines. I'll go on and do it for Jackson." And the teacher's just, "Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up, Quentin, you piece of shit." I don't know why.
I did like that. But yeah, he's really angry at that character, Quentin, just for the final episode. I was like, I don't know what's going on, but I'm really enjoying this dynamic.
But it's funny because it would never have been so direct, but I remember my drama teachers in high school, particularly 7 through 10, were really fun and lenient, and they smoked like fucking chimneys, and they would swear in front of us and have those sorts of relationships with us that were a little bit different than any relationship you have with a teacher in a different class. I was like, yeah, I can believe that interaction to some degree. Some little observations I had along the way. Classic mistake, Jean. There's a bit where she's talking with her clients and she's bored out of her brain. Something about's going on. And she looks up at the clock that she's put behind her. It's like, that is fucking 101. Put the clock on the other side of the room where you can see it. That is a rookie mistake, that one. Also, a lot of episodes start with Otis and Eric riding to school. And they're having a conversation with each other on their bikes. I'm like, that must be a shit ride home, because that is downhill all the way as far as I can tell. Whenever they're riding to school, must suck to ride home. My only thing I did want to ask. Oh, no. Sorry. One other thing. The first episode, there's a plague of chlamydia, or there's chlamydia panic anyway. And everyone's like selling masks and wearing masks. Did not find that particularly funny anymore. Plagues aren't funny anymore.
No. No, hits a little different, doesn't it?
Just hits a little different these days. Did not find that as funny as it probably would have been 2 years ago. What happened to Eric's dad? He's just gone. It's all with Eric's mum this season. His dad doesn't show up once. I'm like, it was so important emotionally to Eric last season. That's a shame. Who knows what happened?
It's probably scheduling.
Scheduling, whatever it is. But I was just like, damn, it just felt like it was just missing a little bit that just Eric's dad was not there.
Yeah.
Least favorite and favorite episode. What was your least favorite episode, Damask?
I didn't necessarily have like a least favorite where I was like, this episode's shit.
I agree.
But I'm going to go with episode 4. So that's the one where Ola and Otis want to do it. Because at this point, I was just like, I'm not invested in this relationship at all. We have the text and Maeve confessing her love.
Sure. I'll say I like that.
Yeah. fair enough. We also have Remy being the worst, coming over and being a dick to Jacob. And I was just so disappointed in Jean. And we also see Adam luring Eric out of the house. And it made me really sad. It made me really, really sad.
Sure.
When that was happening. Yeah. But it's not really because it's bad. It's because things were happening that I didn't like for the characters. Yeah.
That's kind of my argument for my least favorite episode, which is episode 5, camping. Episode 5. It doesn't have a title. It's the camping episode. Because as much as I just said not long ago that I enjoy that Remy is like pathetic, right? He is like the clown. The show is pointing at this character and saying, this guy's a fucking loser. He is such a loser that I don't understand how anyone can think for a second, especially Eric, can look at him and go, this guy's cool and we should follow him and what he's doing. Like, you're a fucking idiot, Eric. There was lots of Maeve and Isaac stuff that episode as well. And I by the end of the season, I'm like, fuck Isaac. So I think what happens in that episode, and it's meant to happen, is that everyone is getting the hard choices and making the wrong choice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's meant to. From a drag point of view, it's exactly what's meant to happen. Mm. But similarly, I'm left going, I don't like the things that happen in this episode, so I'm going to say it's my least favorite. Yeah. But realistically, I had a hard time picking a particular least favorite or a particular favorite. It's funny that the seasons seem to really function great as a whole. They can be both episodic and feel like a complete serialized story, and that's pretty impressive. What was your favorite episode?
My favorite is going to be episode 6, which is the party episode.
Good episode.
Everyone is together and it's, you know, that reveal of Otis's mentality of like being a nice guy. And obviously he does something truly terrible. And then like, you know, people seeing that side of you is a great wake up call. So I think it was a great character moment for Otis. Him vomiting in a cup. I was like, this is amazing. A high school party. Yeah. That was, that's awful. The sweaty grossness of that teen party. I was like, this feels pretty authentic. we also have, you know, some of my favorite moments, which is Jean and Maureen having a great night out. It was so necessary for falling deeper in love with Jean, I think, getting a new side to her now that she's got a friendship, talking about loneliness and perhaps making a mistake in her relationship. And it was just so much fun to watch these like two lonely women build a connection together. I really, really had so much fun watching it and I loved it.
I think I'm going to agree with you that episode 6 is the best episode. I think the back three episodes are generally strong, with 7 does have that bit of clunkiness to it. We talked about with like the Breakfast Club stuff, but overall, I think the party was a great episode. And it was great to get Otis to that place so that we can get him on the path to growth. And it does make him a more compelling character going forward.
We also have that great scene with Jackson and Viv as well.
It is fantastic, yeah. I 100% agree. And, the believability of that party, I think, was really well put. Do you have any predictions, hopes, or concerns going into season 3, which is only a week away?
I'm pretty happy about that. I feel like we've kind of spoken about them already, but I'm hoping for some kind of resolution with the Remy situation, kind of Eric dealing with that and taking responsibility for being pretty careless with someone's feelings.
Sorry, Raheem, do you mean?
Sorry, Raheem, yes. Yep. yeah, so I'm hoping that happens. Yeah, I'd like a bit more from – is his name Groff, Principal Groff?
Yeah.
Is that? Yep. So I'd like perhaps to get – now that he's down in the dumps and his life has really fallen apart, he's on leave, seeing a bit more of that.
Are you up for minor spoilers from what I understand? Okay, cool. All
right. I want Jean and Jacob to get it on because they are – one of the sexiest couples I've ever seen.
I just love Jacob. I really,
he's
really
so
love
beautiful.
Him.
Beautiful. Yeah, he's great.
Something so magnetic about him. It's like, yeah. I get why Jean's into him. I really
well,
do.
When Remy came by and I was talking to Angela, I was like, oh, wouldn't you be so happy if your ex-husband came by and this was your boyfriend? I'm like, sweetie, take your top off, show off your tats, you sexy, sexy man.
And
like,
his little pot belly.
Oh, he's just gorgeous. Yeah, I'd be chuffed if he was my new beau.
Did you like it when he asked Remy to stay for dinner? I was like, that's a fucking power move.
It really is. It really is.
Yeah.
I loved the way he kissed Jean when he left, being like, I'm not actually insecure about this, but I'm just going to give my lady a kiss. I enjoyed that. What else have we got? Obviously, Maeve dealing with what Isaac has done as well as what happened with her mum. I'll leave it there.
I'm not thinking too far ahead. Anything I say, unfortunately, will probably be painted by what I know from the trailers, so I won't say too much. I will put this out there, though, and maybe I'm just forgetting a scene or I was looking at my phone or something that's happened. Did it ever come out? Did Otis ever own up to stealing his mum's notes?
Didn't.
That is a very important fucking thing, I think. Like, Groff didn't take it from Jean. He took it from Otis's locker, and Otis should not have had that in the first place. Mm-hmm. And while he may have been, but he'd had his proper apology with Jacob, which was great because his first one was shit. And I was like, that's not an apology, even though Jacob has been very nice to you here. The second one was legit. And I was like, that's better. And he had that moment where he got to stick up for his mum and all those sorts of things. I was like, there's still a piece of this situation that you have not owned up to. That is extremely important and a huge violation. So that better come up at some stage as well.
I also think that I wonder if Jean will ever put it together that it was Groff, since the only page that wouldn't have been printed was the one that involved him and his wife.
I kind of get the feeling it's just going to be forgotten, that plot point.
Yeah.
I get the feeling we're just moving on.
Because he'd have to lose his job if that ever came out, like permanently.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. Yeah, who knows what's going to happen. But I hope it comes up because it feels so important. But I'm not going to be surprised if they just move on and pretend it didn't happen. Or not to pretend it didn't happen, but just drop it, that storyline, I think. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Hunting Seasons. You can find more of what we do via our website, huntingseasonspodcast.com. Our logo comes from Sean Kirkpatrick, a.k.a. at Shawnee Boy Draws. Our theme song and bumpers from Lucas Heil of Birthday Loyalty Club. Find links to their work in our show notes. You can find myself, Broderick Gordes, on Twitter at bgordes, B-G-O-R-D-E-S, Damask.
You can find me on Twitter at Maskymoo, MaskyMoo.
Thank you I had a really good time talking about Sex Education Season 2, actually. This was a fun discussion.
Can't wait for Season 3.
Yes, that's coming out very soon. That's on September 17th, I believe, on Netflix. So just a week away from when we're recording. Next episode, though, we'll be back to discuss Kevin Can Fuck Himself Season 1. In the meantime, thank you again for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye for now.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with ACAST. Use ACAST's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with ACAST. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.